I thought today it would be fitting to back up a few verses in Matthew chapter 5 to Matthew chapter 4, starting in verse 23. And this is the setting that comes just before we hear the Beatitudes for the first time, at least in Matthew. Jesus went throughout Galilee. And I think, by the way, as I read this, I think it reflects on what just happened in our church, what we just did. Jesus went throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and sickness among the people. News about him spread all over Syria, and people brought to him all that were ill with various diseases, who were suffering with pain, the demon-possessed, those who had seizures, the paralyzed, and he healed them all. Large crowds from Galilee, the Decapolis, Jerusalem, Judea, and the region across the Jordan followed him. Now Jesus, when Jesus saw the crowds, and these were the crowds he saw, when Jesus saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down with his disciples. And he began to teach them, saying, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and say falsely, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. For in the same way, they persecuted the prophets who were before you." Today, we're going to reflect on the blessedness of the pure in heart. I think we know the idea behind having a pure heart. A heart which is not swayed by ulterior motives. A heart which is geared towards a pure motivation, one that is not self-seeking, one that is humble. The idea of being pure in heart, I think we see a lot in little kids. There's nothing more pure in heart than hearing Hunter sing the doxology. It is as innocent and sweet as Jesus would want us to sing it with. That sort of heart we understand. And we see it in children. And we see it slowly begin to wane as adulthood sets in. Our minds and our eyes become clouded with other things. But we're called to be people of pure hearts. And for me, this isn't a matter of us just listing off the sins in the world and saying, "Don't do that. That makes you a pure heart." I don't think that's really what having a pure heart is about. I think all of those things, those sins of the world, the things that so easily entangle us, they fall away when we truly have a pure heart that seeks to see God. When our vision is clear and we don't see anymore the allure of things of this world, and we don't see anymore the need for us to be right or to have the right plan or to be in charge, and we don't see anymore with the eyes of confusion, but see with a trust that God has things ordered. When we can see our world in such a way that the Lord is the author and the perfecter of our faith, then we can have a pure heart. The story that came to mind as I was reading and studying this passage was the story of Paul on the road to Jerusalem. He's out and he's traveling on the road, and Christ meets him there in Acts chapter 9. He was still breathing out murderous threats to the disciples, and he was heading along the way. And there were men and women who were prisoners to Jerusalem, and he was heading to Damascus. And on his journey, suddenly a light from heaven flashed. In verse 3 it says, "And then he fell to the ground and heard a voice saying to him, 'Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me?' 'Who are you, Lord?' Saul asked. 'I'm Jesus who you're persecuting,' he replied. 'Now get up and go to the city where you will be told what you must do.' The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless, for they heard the sound, but they didn't see anyone. And Saul got up from the ground, and when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by hand to Damascus, and for 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. In Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias, and the Lord called to him in a vision. 'Ananias?' 'Yes, Lord.'" It's interesting, the response of one who cannot see the Lord. "Who are you?" And the response of one who clearly saw the Lord. Simply a recognition. "Yes, Lord." There's two people in this story, and two people who struggle, who didn't struggle. Two people. One person who struggled with vision, and one who wrestled with obedience to that vision. Because Ananias didn't really want to go see Saul. He was worried, first of all, Saul would kill him. Second, he didn't really want to die. And I don't know that Ananias was really convinced that something had truly transformed in Saul. Ananias didn't see the plan that God had laid out, that Saul would become the founder of the church, that Saul would be the one who would start all of these little groups and who would begin the work of the church that we benefit from today. Ananias didn't see that. And yet Saul was there blind because he had in his own mind everything that was right. He had taught himself and had learned from the scriptures everything, but he had learned it and he had failed to truly see what God wanted to do in scripture. He didn't see what Jesus really was about. In a sense, two people struggling with their vision. Paul had a pure heart, Saul at that time. He wanted to do what was right by Scripture, and I think he did fall into the pattern of others around him who were leading. He thought in his mind he was doing the right thing, but he did not truly see who he was really persecuting. He was blind. He couldn't see God. Ananias clearly was pure in heart, but he came close to refusing to do what God asked him to do. He was willing to argue with Jesus about this, but yet in the end, he remained faithful. And I believe it's because Ananias' eyes saw. Didn't see the whole story, but saw the God that he could trust. When we have a pure heart, we may not see everything. We may not understand everything. But we can see the God that we can trust. And in doing so, we are blessed. I think, first of all, we need to understand that when we walk into whatever God has called us, that we see the purpose that God has. As an art historian myself, that before I ended up going into Bible college and then into seminary, that's what I spent the first 3 years of my 2 years at Johnson County Community College studying. I was on the slow track throughout college. Even in seminary, it took me 7 years to finish my 3-year degree. But as an art historian, when I walk through the Nelson I don't see things strictly in terms of my own preference. I still have preferences. I have styles that I like. But I don't see things just in terms of a preference. I see things in terms of what the artists intended and what each school of thought in art taught and how it changed the art that would come after. I see art in a continuum along all kinds of shifts and changes in ideas, in thinking. Some people walk into the art gallery and they look at me and they say, that's hideous, that's ugly, that's ridiculous. And some people walk into the art gallery and they have very clear ideas of what is and isn't what they feel is good art. And I look at it and I simply see the work that has been done along the continuum of art to bring change. I have a different set of eyes when I look at art and art history because I understand what came before and what came after. And I can look into what the artist intended to convey from their own writings to the art historians and the theorists that talk about their art. But others wouldn't necessarily see that. God realized this and Paul realized this in Romans chapter 1. We as human beings struggle to see the purpose that our Creator had in creation. It's because Romans 1 is clear, it says, Paul says in Romans 1. Since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature have been clearly seen by what has been created, so that all humanity is without excuse. For though they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him as God, but in their thinking became futile and they were foolish and their hearts were darkened. And I would say their eyes were darkened. They couldn't see that everything around them that was created with a purpose. One of my favorite theologians is a guy named John Polkinghorne. He was a quantum physicist before he came to Christ. Guess what? He's still a quantum physicist. But he studied physics and he studied the science behind the physics. And there came a point in his life as he studied at Cambridge that he began to ask the question, who turned on the lights? Who made it this way? It is far too complex a system to simply stumble forward into its future. Somewhere along the way, there was a design. For Polkinghorne, he looked at his world and this scripture came to life before he even knew it. The scripture came to life. And he said, I understand something about creation is calling me to a deeper question. And it's who? For us, sometimes we have to understand and take off our blinders of doubt and our blinders of confusion, and simply understand that things around us were created and ordered with a purpose. And when we can see that, we can walk with a pure heart. We also have to see things without prejudice. This was the challenge that Ananias was facing. To lay aside his prejudice against Saul and to go to him and to meet with him as God has called him. His trust in God had to be stronger than his own personal prejudice, or else this plan would never happen. We have to see things in our world beyond its brokenness. Ananias needed to not just see the mess that Paul was and the mess that Paul was making. I keep saying Paul. At this point, he was Saul. But the mess. I have a lot of social worker friends that's one of the things that they are gifted at. Teachers are the same way. They see these little train wreck of children who can't put their ABCs in order or who can't read words and understand or that don't do math problems quite right and come up with the right answers, and teachers and invest in them over the course of a semester, and at the end of that semester, they see new things happening. Teachers have to go into every semester believing that children will improve. They can't live with the prejudice from their first moment of seeing them. And in the same way, I've seen social workers that work with families knowing that these families are train wrecks. We have one family, and a mom just sent me a text this last week. She just got an interview at Hy-Vee so that she can start working at the Market Grill. She'd been working at Dollar Tree for $8.75 an hour. She has a child that's about ready to come home. She finally has an apartment, and she was approved for Section 8 housing so she can afford the apartment. But even with that $8.75 an hour job is not going to pay for food in that house. And she was all excited because I had sent her a lead to contact somebody at Hy-Vee, and the job she's applying for, get this, pays between $15 and $18 an hour, and she will get 30 hours a week, almost guaranteed, working in the kitchen. And she said, "Lee, I had no clue I could ever get a job that would pay that much." And I'm thinking, I don't think I could live on that much. But for her, it was a moment. We have to be people who don't just see the brokenness of people. And this was a mom who came through Strengthening Families shortly after her kids were taken into care and was an absolute train wreck. We have to be people who see beyond, who see without prejudice. That's what had to happen with Ananias, to surrender his prejudice. And we have to see with the process, to trust the process. Like a builder walks on to a job site. I was riding my bike and on the trail south, there's a kind of a big section of trail opened up. And what looks out to the back of the trail are these houses that are probably starting in the 500s and up to the 1 millions. I mean, these are massive houses. And all along, there are houses in different stages of completion. And you see foundations poured. You see other things. And then you go by one lot that's empty, and there's just a big pile of lumber and forms. And you look at that, and I know that I can see from those lumber and forms, I don't know the specific shape, but there will be a shape that will form up a foundation that will then in turn have wood and structure built upon it. And then upon that, there will be a skin placed on it. There will be a roof placed on it. There will be sheetrock placed in it and electrical. And the next thing you know, it will be a $750,000 house that somebody can live in. Probably most of us could live in. All of us could live in together and not see each other every day. But there's a plan, and there's a purpose. The challenge with Ananias is he didn't see the plan and the purpose, and that almost stalled him. But his pure heart said, "I have to trust God. If God is sending me to my death, there's a reason. If God is sending me to talk to Paul, there's a reason. And if I choose not to do it, then I failed in my obedience to my God." Philippians chapter 1 is the reminder of how our Creator has a plan. Starting in verse 3, "I thank God every time," Paul says, "that I remember you in all of my prayers, all of you, I always pray with joy because of your partnership in the gospel from the first day until now, being confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion unto the day of Jesus Christ." The pure in heart may not understand the whole purpose and the whole plan, but they will surrender their wills to that plan. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. My encouragement for us today is to live with that pure heart, to take off the things like Paul's eyes that were physically blinded. The rest of the story is Ananias walks in and he lays hands on Saul and Saul's healed. And what looked like scales fell from his eyes. What happened? Saul's heart was purified. And he saw life with no prejudice, willing to even reach the Gentiles. Even reach the Gentiles. He saw life with a new purpose, that he himself started to see the whole plan of what the church would become. And he saw life in the process, that he was but the beginning. And the rest of the story, as he invested in Timothy, was that he would pass on this gift of leadership in the church that would then be passed on over and over and over and over, all the way to today, because I live in the gift of that leadership being passed on. Blessed are you who are pure in heart. You will see God.